We'll call the meeting to order. Representative Demmer isn't here yet, so we have a quorum, though. So would Representative Brown like to okay the minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Brown moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion?
Yeah.
If hearing none, say
yes.
Thank you. Since Representative Demmer isn't here yet, Steve Heinze will give us the overview. He's our expert on property taxes. I use him a lot. And just for everybody's information, we don't really have the bill in front of us, but it's an informational bill, and we're going to do that quite a few times, because I think it's important for us to know what's in the bills that come up in front of us as members of the rural economies and ag, and so that when we get to the House floor, we haven't heard what's going on and can't add to that at the end either. So thank you. Mr. Heinze?
Yes, Madam Chairman, thank you. The bill, I've worked with Representative Demmer in developing this bill, so I'm pretty familiar with it. And this is House File 101. I presume they have the bill summaries in your folders? Okay. And the overview of the bill really explains the thing very, it's really about all that you need to know. It's a kind of a simple concept. It would say, for the purposes of school debt levies, so school levies for capital improvements, that the agricultural land value would no longer be considered part of the tax base in the spreading of those levies. House garage in 1 acre, as most of you know, is treated pretty separately from the ag land, and that would continue to be part of that tax base, as would, under this proposal, other agricultural buildings on the agricultural buildings on the property, but not the land itself. And this would apply to all of debt, existing debt and new bond projects proposed to the voters, and it would take effect already for taxes payable in 2008. And the section by section, mostly it's just the definitions of terminology that you need. It would be a new tax base. Right now, as some of you know, we have one tax base, which is net tax capacity, which is what almost all school levies are spread on, or almost all levies, I should say, city, county, school, etc. And then we have another one called referendum market value, which is the one that's used for school operating referenda, and that is the one where ag value is excluded, as is seasonal recreational value. And this would sort of be adding a third tax base, where for school debt levies you would have net tax capacity, the so quote-unquote normal tax base, but you would exclude ag land value from that tax base. And so that means that basically districts that have lots of ag land would have a significantly lower tax base for the purposes of those levies. And in some cases, and in lots of cases, state aid will fill in for that missing tax base so that there won't be much change in the burden on taxpayers in the district. But for other districts that have higher wealth districts, there won't be, it might be partially filled in with state aid, but not completely. And in those cases, then that tax that's going off of the agricultural land will be shifted onto, to the other taxpayers in the district. And we do have some analytical pages I can show you that kind of try to quantify that, but maybe I'll wait till you hear from Representative Demmer before we go into those.
Good afternoon. Hello, Representative Demmer. Pleased to have you in front of us.
Thank you. I guess I'm up, huh?
You're up.
and committee going on now, so I'm sorry I'm getting late.
Mr. Heinze has been doing a very good job for you.
Well, Madam Chair, if I would, do you want the person in charge or the person who knows what's going on? That's, you know how that goes.
But maybe we can have Mr. Heinze kind of wrap up, and then you can add what you would like to give to this committee.
Sure.
Well, maybe I'll just try to walk them through the handouts a little bit. The one handout that you've been handed out is a two-sided sheet of paper, and it says on the one side was the analysis of ISD number 531 Byron, and the back side or front, depending, what would be the same thing for District 533 Dover Iota. And these are just two districts that I picked to illustrate how the proposal would work. They happen to be in and near Representative Demers' district, but they weren't chosen necessarily for that purpose. So let me just start with the one for maybe the 533 Dover Iota. And this is kind of a complex sheet, I realize, and so feel free to ask questions if you will. The top line there shows the amount of the debt revenues that are required for debt payments in 2007 for Dover Iota, about $1.35 million. And where's the next? There's a lot of detail about how you get to the various figures that maybe we don't need to talk about, but if you look in the column, the second column from the right, which is really current law, you'll see that towards the end of that column, there'll be a total annual aid, total annual levy. And have you found those figures yet? They're kind of toward the middle of the page from top to bottom, in the second column from the right. It says total annual aid, $248,000. Total annual levy, $1.1 million. So right now, that district achieves its $1.35 million in revenue through $250,000 approximately in state aid and about a $1.1 million levy. Under the proposal, there would be less tax base, and you can see that in going up near the top of the column. The right-hand-most column is the proposal, and you see the tax base per pupil unit. That's probably the most term we use the most in this world. In the current law, you saw that it's $2,918 per pupil. Under this proposal, it would go down to $2,147, and that reflects the loss of that agricultural tax base. There's less tax base per pupil. Now, jumping down to the bottom of that column, the same numbers we were looking at with the current law, under this proposal, now their state aid would shoot up from $248,000 all the way up to $540,000. So about $300,000 in additional state aid would go to that district, and therefore they'd only have to take in $300,000 less in levy. The tax rate that's shown is that's not a term you necessarily need to know, but they're the same. And that's telling me that in this case, there would be enough state aid that would completely fill in for that loss of tax base in this district. And then at the bottom of the page, we have a bunch of typical or hypothetical properties within that district. So we first start with the residential homes valued at $50,000, $100,000, or $175,000. So those would be the houses in town, you might think of them. And then the farm homesteads. There's a bunch of different farm homesteads shown with different configurations of land, ag land, building value, and then a house. The first two shown then are the small farms, $350,000 total in value. And you can see there the two, again, over the right-hand-most columns, under current law, the taxes on those farms would be about $638. This is just the school debt tax now. But under the proposal, those tax burdens on those farms would go down to $165 in the first case and $214 in the second. They're a little different because these two farms have a little different amount of ag building value, and the ag building value is still liable for the tax. So a substantial reduction for both. It's not the same for the two because they have a little difference in the ag value. The next two farms that are talked about are $1 million farms with $50,000 homes on them, again with a little different split between the land and the building part. And you can see that the significant reductions in the tax on those properties from about $2,200 in current law to around $200 or $350 in the case of the one with more buildings. And then the last two that are shown, again, about $1 million in agricultural value, but a much more valuable house, $175,000 house. And there the tax would change from about $2,500 to about $700 in the one case and $1,091 in the other. Again, you can kind of compare those to what a $175,000 house would pay in town by looking up above. So it's still paying more than the $175,000 house in town, but not not as much more. And then the bottom then it shows a few different commercial industrial properties with value of $100,000, $250,000, and $1 million. Now the back, so that was the Dover district, and then the same information is presented for the Byron district on the other side of the page. And the difference in the one of the main difference in the Byron situation is that if you notice the tax base per capita there, per pupil, in Byron's case is a little higher, $4,127 under current law. It drops down to $3,700. And in this case, a critical number for that line is $3,200. If you're below that amount, then the state's fully filling in with state aid for all the tax base you lose. If you're above that number, you're only partially, you only get partial aid, and you don't, there's not necessarily enough to fill in for all the missing tax base. So in the case of the Byron district, they go from about $300,000 in aid and $2.2 million in levy under current law. They go up to about $450,000 in aid to, again, so there's some extra aid, but it's not enough to completely offset how much tax base they lose. You see the tax rate increases from 34.8 to 36.3. And then in this case, you'll see that the $50,000 home has an increase in tax of about $8, $100,000 about $15, and about $28 on $175,000 home, showing that that property was not completely filled in with state aid or that district. I won't walk through the farm numbers, but you can see them for yourselves. I think those are the main situations to be aware of. Is for some districts that are lower value are going to come out like Dover and be fully compensated, and others like Byron will not be fully compensated. And the second handout that I had is probably even more than you want to deal with. I can give you this. And that would be this one with lots of numbers on it. That starts out at the top, House Research Simulation Number 7B1 up in the upper left-hand corner. And this is a standard tool that we use in the tax committee to look at property tax proposals to try to get at the overall effects of a proposal. The main things I wanted to walk you through here are this page one that you're looking at. Notice in the upper right it says statewide. So this is the statewide total or statewide average you could think about. The top table shows the different types of property, the classes of property that we talk about over on the left-hand side. So the top of the list is residential homestead, residential non-homestead. Down at the bottom of the list, you'll see the three agricultural classes, ag homestead house, which really means house, garage, and 1 acre, ag homestead land, which really is land and buildings, but just the agricultural part of farm, and then the bottom is the ag non-homestead property. And so if I could direct your attention then all the way over to the toward the right-hand side of the equation of the page, you'll see the column header says net tax, and then it says change, and percentage change right next to it. Those are the two columns that are the most popular on our printout. So what that is indicating is statewide average residential homesteads will go up That 15852 represents about $16 million statewide. And the percentage, that's about 0.5%. So on average statewide, and that's a very broad thing to be averaging a proposal like this over, we'd expect about a half a percent increase on a homestead's tax under this proposal. Dropping down to the lower three classes, the house, garage, and 1 acre, you'll see theirs is increasing a little bit more, about 3%, but the ag homestead land is reducing, is going down by 14%, and the ag non-homestead is going down by about 11%. So, and that's about $23 million and $16 million in dollars, so $39 million for those two classes is being taken off of them. The next two pages then are the same information, but they're presented for Greater Minnesota as a whole and metro area. And in Greater Minnesota, you'll see a little bit stronger effect there when you just focus on Greater Minnesota, because this proposal mostly affects Greater Minnesota, where the agricultural property is. Homes on average are going up about 1.4%. The ag numbers are similar because that's where most of the ag property is. At the bottom of this page, it shows some example homes and what the effect would be. And you see, like, an average value home is $152,000, a tax increase there of about $25, 1.7%. Just kind of trying to give you an idea of the range of effect under this proposal. And I should probably have added that we don't have great information on this proposal because we don't have actual data on how much ag building value there is. We're in the process of trying to get better data. We have some information on it, but it's something that right now we don't ask them to report ag building value separate from the land. And so we've kind of had to do some phone calls and do kind of some quick surveying to get some information. But so these numbers could change over the course of the session, if we get a little bit better numbers later on in the session. With that, I think I'll maybe stop talking at you and let Representative Demmer take over. But obviously, if you have questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Heinze. Representative Demmer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I apologize for not being at the beginning. We're going through the tax bill. At least they are going through the tax bill. I'm here, so I'm not. I don't know what was talked about before. I want to give you a little general background, Madam Chair, and members, if I could, on this particular legislation. Last year, I, along with Representative Broad, introduced, I think we had three different proposals that would kind of approach the same subject of ag land taxation for the purpose of school capital levies. I serve on the Education Committee, Madam Chair, the Education Finance I have for the past 4 years. And we're seeing, we've been hearing through the years, and more recently, an increasing outcry, if you will, from especially rural school districts about the ability to pass capital debt levies. The agricultural sector, which is Greater Minnesota, as we see, did you hand this out? Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I don't have it here to hand out, I guess, but I, Mr. Hines has some statistics, too, that show an increasing level of, an increasing market valuation of bare ag land in reference to other properties in the state of Minnesota. And what that's doing is...
Representative, do you want a page to make copies for us?
Sure, we can do that. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
The issue is these ag land, the bare land, is what I've been postulating and what those of us in rural Minnesota have been postulating is really causing a change in the relative burden, if you will, relative to the tax levies and for debt levies. So we looked at it from a couple of different proposals. As you know, for operating referendums for schools, we use house, garage, 1 acre as the ag valuation, if you will. And then for school capital levies, we still include house, garage, 1 acre and improvements, which is your buildings and that sort of thing, and also the bare land. Last year, when we came with these proposals, we didn't have the data to know what the building site concept would be, which is what we're talking about here. So we had a number of different proposals to look at. over the summer, Mr. Hines did some work on this to find out what that would mean if we did a building site, which would include house, garage, 1 acre, and the improvements on a farm. And that's what you have in front of you, and that's what I brought up. The interesting thing that I found out is the assessors out in the county level do have the data for the valuation of the improvements of the buildings, but they've never reported into the state separately from the ag land. So when they report house, garage, 1 acre as one valuation, and when they report ag land as the other valuation, they've been combining the improvements in ag land. So the raw data is out there, we just don't have it in a way to, as Mr. Hines was saying, to see exactly what the end result would be. So Mr. Hines did some research for me and tried to come up with an idea, because I was really concerned, quite frankly, with this concept. I like the idea of the building site. We got a house, garage, 1 acre, which is our homes and the farm, and we also have the buildings, whether it's a dairy barn, a hog barn, machine sheds, grain setups and that sort of thing. The idea is that those properties, that business property, if you will, is not really subject to the kind of speculation and 1031 exchange pressure that the bare ag land has. So if we remove the ag land and keep the building set, we now have the home, we now have a business valuation, something we can work with. So that's where this came from. And we now have data to give us some ideas what that means. I was concerned about the valuation of the residences and the valuation of CI property after we did this. Having an idea, not knowing what the numbers were, and when Mr. Hines came with his data, I thought, okay, we're on to something, because I think it's pretty good. Now, when the original estimation we had was about $9 million total of property tax relief, is what it would amount to. The revenue estimate that we now have is actually about $16 million. Isn't that right? I'll defer to Mr. Hines about that. We had a different number that just came out in the last couple of days from the, do you call that, estimate? Preliminary analysis is what they call it.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, Representative Demmer, the $9 million is still, we think, is the amount of aggregate tax relief. I guess that would be, you would think that would be the amount of state aid there would be. And yet the Department of Revenue is predicting more like a $15 million cost in additional state aid. So there's still some reconciliation that we need to do on that, I think. But
well, Madam Chair, if I would, what I was getting to in that is, with the this goes hand in hand with what we call debt equalization that we use in our schools. And Mr. Hines has been talking about the Tier 1, the Tier 2. That Tier 1 level of $3,200 has stayed static for the last number of years. Most school districts in the state, I'm going to say 300 out of our 350, and Representative Heidgerken might know that number better than me, are really beyond the level of that first year equalization now, because as valuations have gone up, that number stayed static. Using the static number is what we've done our runs with on this bill. The revenue estimate is about $16 million. Mr. Hines' estimate of property tax additional debt equity aid was $9 million. We've got to reconcile that. There's also work being done, Madam Chair and members, on that debt equalization formula. And if that does change as is being looked at, as we saw with the Dover-Yoda, where their valuations are low, basically, the debt equalization would pick up virtually all of the increase that would have gone otherwise to home and commercial and industrial. And we'd look at property tax relief basically to bare ag land is what the net result would be if the debt equalization gets changed along with this type of legislation. So with that as a general background, I'm probably getting in more than I even want to try to explain, but I'd be happy to take questions or engage in dialogue.
Thank you, Representative Demmer. One of the testifiers has to, I think they have to speak in front of the Senate, so they want to come before us now, and then we can have questions from the committee on your proposal.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell, Schools for Equity and Education, I really thank you for your indulgence. I'm running on a very tight schedule today, and I'll be very, very brief. I think Mr. Walseth from the Minnesota Rural Education Association is probably going to say many of the same things and probably say them better than I will, so I will defer to him in many of the things. I think what Representative Demmer has hit on is very, very important, and his final comments are talking about how this needs to work in conjunction with increased debt service equalization is very, very important. Agricultural land valuation has been a long time problem. I think it probably goes back from when the property tax was first invented. I think that it's very, very difficult to get a real handle as to what the production value, the actual production value of the land is, and how that relates in any other way to a business tax. I think last year, and Representative Demmer talked about this, I think that there were bills talking about creating a whole new tax base based on production value as opposed to real property value. And as we look at ad valorem taxation, they're ag land has always been a different animal, and I think it's important that it be looked at as such. One other angle, the districts that I represent are somewhat different than the districts that Mr. Walseth represents. Many of his are smaller districts where ag land is a preponderant component of the total value in the district. That is less so the case for many of the districts that I represent. What is happening in a lot of the districts I represent is the speculative value of the agricultural property is simply going far beyond the farmer's ability to pay or maintain a farming operation. It's kind of a Pyrrhic joke, but to say that many of these people have two attorneys on hand, a tax attorney or a bankruptcy attorney, because depending on what happens at the township board level and whether or not those folks are going to be able to develop and subdivide land in a way that's going to be useful for developers simply may allay some of the pressures that they have and as they're allowed to sell. But I think that in townships, and I think that this is where the balance of keeping open space and those types of things, those values in place, very, very important. But there's a lot, I guess what I'm saying is there's a lot of different sets of values that go in, and the guy that always seems to be caught in the middle is the farmer. And as his land value goes up based on decisions that he simply has no control of making. So with that, I would stand for any questions, and then again, thank you for allowing me to leapfrog Mr. Walseth.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Heidrichen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I missed the first part of it, but Representative Demmer, I thank you for carrying this bill. It's something that I think that we discussed last year and the year before, and it's been an ongoing problem for us out in rural Minnesota. Speaking with, and I represent Marquardt is not here, and I spoke to represent Marquardt, and there were a couple bills that were similar to this last year, and represent Marquardt stated that Representative Demmer had the answer. He thought the best answers. I just want you to know that. But at the same time, Representative Doty, you and I have had a series of meetings, have we not? And with the Representative Welty, and Representative Demmer has been involved, Representative Marquardt, there have been a good number of us, and Representative Demmer talked about the other piece that we need to do, and that's the debt equalization. I know over in Uppsala, the situation there is when they, and explain it very simply for you folks, is years ago, we'll just use Uppsala as an example, they built a brand new school building over there about 7 years ago. And they built it, and the school board went out and told the folks, look, this is what it's going to cost you in taxes. And at the time, the school board didn't realize themselves that things can change over time. Well, Upslope's around, it's located pretty close to St. Cloud, so people have been coming in and buying that property, buying farmland for other means, for other things. But farmland prices have escalated. Back when they built the building, the state was paying about 84% of the equalization. They are right now down to, Representative Doherty, you can correct me, 34%, someplace in there? 29%. So the equalizer came in, so it made it look like the school board was lying. These farmers all went back to the school board and said, well, you said this is what's going to cost us. But when property values go up, what happens, the state comes in, and we negs on their obligation, because when they did it, they were property poor. All of a sudden, they show us property wealthy. And I think that kind of explains it in a layman's term, what actually happened. But you had the problem as well, Representative Trumbull. A number of your districts are going through the same thing. I was home this last Sunday. I met with some of the school board members at BDE. Very much the same situation. But I have one question. Does this bill, if we pass it, is there any retroactive clause in it or anything? Is it just for any new building going on now, any new operating issues going on? I mean, not capital issues going on forth, or is there a retroactive? Does it go back a couple of years? Does it use anything? Either one of you answer that question.
Representative Dammer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Heidgerken, of course, this doesn't deal with any operating referendums. We're not doing anything with this. The question that came as we were putting this bill together is, do we have this bill be effective with any capital levies passed from here forward and not affect ones currently in existence, or do we have it come in effect immediately and change even the ones already in existence? I had the language adjusted so that it would change immediately for any that are in existence. Now, it would not go backwards. In other words, if I'm a farmer, if my taxes were high last year and lower this year, last year's are done. But it would just recalculate it going forward from here. My rationale, Representative Heidgerken, is right on with what you were just talking about when we passed debt levies. And I don't go so strong as to say that the state reneged or anybody tried to do something wrong. But because of debt equalization, the valuations kept going up, it kept causing these tiers to change. And so the percentage of state aid would go down. And so that would change ongoing. So I saw nothing wrong with bringing this in and changing them the other direction right away also, even if they're existing and halfway down the road on their levies.
Madam Chair, if I could just add, I think another thing that's happening, and I think Mr. Walseth will probably talk about this, is the effect of declining enrollment because these are per pupil amounts. Your land value can stay exactly the same, but if your pupils go down, you actually look richer than you were in the past. And so I think that that's something that we need to look at, or legislation needs to look at. I think the MSBA, what they've been working on is some kind of indexing of the debt service equalization factor so that it will key off an average, so there'll be some kind of keeping up as opposed to forcing the legislature to come back, because oftentimes, it's really hard to sometimes equalizing factors or changing equalizing factors don't kind of rise to the level of something that has to be done, but all of a sudden it gets to be 5, 6, 7 years and it gets to be a big chunk of money to adjust them. So maybe it would be better to have the equalizing factors kind of ride along with where values are going. Again, I thank you. If there's any more questions, I'll...
Representative Jones.
Madam Chair, to either witnesses, and again, I'm sure we all like the bill, but someone's got to play devil's advocate ultimately, so we facilitate the debate here. And does this make it easier or harder to pass a referendum? I mean, if you have, unfortunately, we have less farmers than we have city folk in our districts, every one of us. So now when you have a referendum, you're going to go in and tell the bigger group that they're going to pay more than the other group. So from a devil's advocacy standpoint, does it make it easier, Representative Dammer, or harder to ultimately pass that referendum when you've now reduced the size of the pool you're collecting from?
Representative Dammer?
No, Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, right on. That's exactly why I was excited to find out the results of Mr. Hines' research this summer, to find out, first of all, what that change would be. And again, it's estimates. He did the best job he could. It seems small. When you and I look at 1 or 2% or 0.5%, doesn't seem like a whole lot. But if you go, and we got to look at specifics here, when you go out to rural Minnesota, the various districts we're talking about, where you do have maybe a small amount of residential and consumer, residential and commercial industrial base, you take the farmland off, that shift is very not taken up by very much. And so you could have some big changes in a small town out in rural Minnesota that doesn't have a large residential or commercial base. So I was very concerned about that. I think the key is two things. Number one, how big is your residential and commercial industrial base to handle any shift that does occur? And number two, do we get the debt equalization piece taken care of and get that adjusted, so that most of that change, if not all of it, as we saw in Dobriota's case, gets taken up by increased state aid, which is property tax relief, which is another issue because that's part of the budget. So that would be the answer to your question, because you're right on, Representative Junkie. That is the key question.
Yeah, and I don't know that we know the answer until and when it passes and how they handle it out there. Number two, what do we do about all our friends across the northern third of northeastern Minnesota and says, well, that's nice with farmland, but what about production timberland and woodland? Why wouldn't we be included? Those are active lands that we use for logging, and you know, it's nice farmers down there, but you can hear them right now, can't you? They're just kind of whining about this to us. So what do we tell those folks up there when they add the amendment to this bill to include their production timber acres on this too?
It is in there, yeah.
Hmm?
Representative Demmer?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I haven't had any of that input yet, Representative Junkie.
Or Madam Chair, maybe I should ask. Someone said it's in your bill now. Did you include them?
Is that his bill?
I guess I would have to defer to Mr. Hines maybe to see if that classification of land is included. Is that ag land? Oh. Is that considered ag land?
Madam Chair? Madam Chair?
Have they signed on?
Madam Chair?
Representative Hydrickson?
I believe the bill, Representative Demmer, does excludes timberland.
Yeah, Mr. Hensley?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, on page 2 of the bill, line 2.5, you'll see that it's excluding the tax capacity attributable to ag land or timberland.
It's not.
So
it is included or isn't?
It's included.
It's included, then the exclusion would be excluded.
Would be excluded from tax.
I've excluded that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Should we? Do you have other questions for Representative Demmer? Otherwise, we can call some of the other testifiers down.
Okay, I'm sure I'll wait.
Let's see, Mr. Walsa. There he is.
I'm sure I have a couple of handouts that will hopefully make it a little easier to see exactly what it is we're talking about today. Madam Chair, members, Sam Walsh with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. Our organization is a consortium of about 150 rural school districts, and as Mr. Lundell indicated, most of our districts, in fact, I think the fiscal note last year on Representative Demmer's bill indicated that there are 128 school districts in the state who have as their tax base 50% or more of their land as agricultural land. And as Representative Junkie was just indicating about, if the dilemma here is that school district bond issues are failing because the agricultural community is coming in saying that the tax effort is too high, and so they're voting no, we have a concern that completely removing ag land from this formula will shift too much of the burden then onto homeowners, who will then in turn say the tax effort is too high on us. And so as you're working on this issue, I think it's appropriate to try and find what the appropriate balance between tax burdens between property tax types is. Coming around should be one little district run. See if it gets there. Basically, this was a hypothetical district at the statewide average for ANTC per pupil, which is about $7,200. Currently, a house, $150,000 home, would be paying about $344. This is assuming an $18 million bond issue. If you remove all of the ag land, that $150,000 homeowner effort increases to $536. Likewise, on the house on the farmland at a $500,000 farm with a $70,000 house, the current effort is about $791, which is significantly higher than the homeowner at $344. But that farm effort drops from $791 down to $250, whereas the homeowner increases from about $344 up to $536. Now, this is a hypothetical example. You can play around with any number of these factors. It depends on the mix of property in the district, where their current wealth per pupil sits today. But it does highlight a concern that we have from MREA's perspective that we will end up cost-shifting too much of the burden then onto homeowners, which then makes it almost impossible to pass bond issues. But this really isn't exactly the point I wanted to talk about today, Madam Chair. The real point we wanted to talk about is this. And if you have this graph, this is a pretty simple graphic about what is going on. I think as Representative Demmer indicated, the equalization factor of $3,200 in wealth per pupil is something that has been frozen since the early 1990s. And property values have been skyrocketing, and that's the red line you see there. And so basically, the vast majority of school districts in Minnesota have fallen off of this formula, so they're no longer qualifying for any kind of equalization aid for debt service levies. Getting this equalization factor from $3,200 at least to the statewide average, or maybe even a little bit above, would do tremendous things for at least for improving this otherwise broken formula. Madam Chair, you can see on this other handout I have going around just some bar graphs. You can see that in 1997, the state of Minnesota was a partner with school districts for debt service levies to the tune of 10.6%. The state was paying about 10.6% of debt service out there. This next year, that is expected to shrink down to 2.2%, and you can see by 2009 will be down to about 1.6%. And that's a result of increasing market values, a frozen equalization factor, and then as Mr. Lundell said, there's a hidden component in all of this, and that is declining enrollment and how that impacts a district's wealth per pupil. So, Madam Chair and members, as you consider this proposal this year, we just ask you to keep a couple of things in mind. The first is be careful about cost shifting between property types. And the second thing is if you could take a bigger picture look at the whole debt service formula, because this is one of the formulas in school districts that is just fundamentally broken, and we need a lot of reform there. Madam Chair, those are my comments. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Walsh? Representative Morrow?
Madam Chair, this is to either of the testifiers.
Yeah.
I agree with you that the debt equalization factor has to be addressed. And either Representative Demmer or Mr. Walsh, if you have A, proposals of what that debt equalization factor should be, what should we move from the 3,200 to what? And Representative Demmer, is changing the debt equalization amount a linchpin of moving on your legislation?
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Morrow, I guess I'll answer the second question
first.
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think it's a linchpin. I think the problem exists either direction. We have two separate things we're addressing. The debt equalization piece is important. And I think it really it helps the bill that I'm trying to do because it takes away a lot of that shift is what
right.
It does. And I think it also meets a lot of the need that a lot of us have or a lot of the things a lot of us talk about, and that's property tax relief.
Right.
And targeted property tax relief, I might add. But having said that, in terms of what's the proper level for debt equalization, I know Representative Heidgerken, Representative Welty, I've been part of those conversations. I've been working on this part, I've been working on that part. Been looking at, and I think it's on Mr. Walsh's handout here, the average is a little over $7,200, and I think they've been looking at $8,000 as the first tier, is what his proposal would be, and obviously there's adjustments to be made of that. But that's what that bill does, and I guess that is separate legislation.
Thank you.
Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, and I just mentioned to Representative Morrow that we will be meeting. Representative Doherty, are you? Where are we meeting at 4 tomorrow? Is it in your office? You know? And Representative Welty's. Anybody here interested in meeting with us? Because what we're basically doing, there were three different bills last year. I know Representative Lanning, Representative Soderstrom, Representative Erickson had bills addressing this issue. So we basically have taken the three bills, right? I think, Sam, you're involved with this, and kind of coming up with the best answer. We're trying to keep it simple. We can't come up with three different bills and expect to get all three through or any one of them. I think we come through united from rural Minnesota and something that will help us in this particular area. But with that said, I think that in fairness, there's always going to be some districts that play out very differently. And I think as legislators have done that on education bills in the past, when you do your district runs, you run the Y, Twin Valley came out real well, and Representative Eakin and Ada didn't come out so well. But every district has got different issues at play. Even your bill, Representative Demmer, I have a lot of, within the Albany and the Melrose and Sauk Center, those school districts have a lot of dairy farms. So in your district as well, Representative Otremba, and Doherty, there's a lot of dairy farms, so that acre and a half is going to generate a lot of income. But you get out in some of the other districts, like Minnewaska, there's no livestock. Obviously, it's going to have a different play. So, but we have to do something, and it's a starting point, and let's hope we get there. And I think we'll get those issues addressed within Representative Demmer's bill, as well as within the bill that we're going to end up with. So, but tomorrow at 4 o'clock, for anybody that wants to show up, it's an education. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could ask, how big is Representative Welty's office?
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this would be a question for Mr. Walseth. According to this sheet that you handed out here, are you saying that Representative Welty is working on some bills right now, talking about debt equalization? And in the final column here, the last column, is that the numbers for Representative Demmer's bill? Is that what this is?
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, that's correct. This hypothetical run was based on a previous conversation I'd had with Representative Welty. As Representative Heidgerken indicated, there's going to be a powwow tomorrow afternoon to kind of talk about that, so I don't know if he's changed his mind on some of the thresholds he wants to work with. The last column is the loss of ag land based on current law, so it doesn't include any changes that Representative Welty has been discussing so far.
Representative Demmer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could address that also, Representative Hamilton, I think what you're seeing is very interesting, and it points out the base philosophy of what we're doing here. What Mr. Walseth handed out here basically shows a $70,000 home with absolutely no buildings of any kind, bare ag land. So when you have a situation where you have, and I don't know the characterization here, but it really depends on what your district looks like. You have a lot of bare ag land, virtually no buildings, no livestock, no grain setups, that sort of thing. And if you also have a small tax base of homeowners and commercial industrial, you're going to see a significant shift. And I think that's what this points out. I would venture to say that this may be a district in a real rural area that doesn't have, like I said, livestock or other buildings. It might be one end of the extreme, to be honest about it, but it does point out that this is the effect you could have, and that's what we have to look at.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and this will be another question for Mr. Walseth. And on this chart, so this graph that you handed out, you had the rates frozen at 3,200 since 2003, and I think the question came up, but I didn't hear the answer. Where should that be, in your opinion?
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, that's a good question. It has to do with how far do you want to extend the relief. I can be very selfish and sit here today and say the membership I'm representing, you could probably top it out at 6,000 and that would be good enough. To probably get broader relief out there, it should probably be somewhere around $8,000 per pupil. I think that would cover close to 55% or maybe upwards of 60% of the school districts in the state. Of course, the more you raise that equalization factor, the higher the price tag gets from the state perspective.
Any other questions for the testifiers? Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I believe Farmers Union and Farm Bureau are going to come down together and discuss the issue. Would you like to state your name for the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chris Raddatz. I do the legislative work for Farm Bureau, and I appreciate the opportunity to discuss these issues with you. I'm here representing Farm Bureau. We're a general grassroots organization organized in 78 local units throughout the organization, throughout the state. We're in our 88th year at Farm Bureau, and I don't know specifically what the policies were at the very beginning, although some think I do, but trying to lighten it up a little is all. But I can tell you that property taxes have been a big issue for farmers. And when it comes to property taxes, what's the problem? Quite simply, they're driving up the cost of doing business. And in some areas, in a farming operation, you can do some things to try and cut costs, maybe look for a lower cost feed supplier or fuel supplier or fertilizer supplier. But with property taxes, your only options are just to pay the tax. And we have two major concerns in this area that have already really been addressed a little bit and come on the table. One is the whole issue of property tax assessments, which I think Mr. Peterson is going to spend a little bit more time on. But as you're seeing, when you look at this, it's a complex problem. There isn't just one thing that's wrong. There's many, many issues that need to be addressed. And the whole issue about the increases in market values and what's driving that and how we assess ag land is something that I would encourage you to work with your colleagues on the tax committee and on the floor to try and address that issue. Now, we've had a policy in Farm Bureau for many years called the House, Garage, and 1 Acre, and you've heard of it. We were really successful, I think it was in 2001, but except for the school debt service levies. And our policy would be that we exempt ag land from them. The current system, unfortunately, really drives some wedges between farmers and non-farmers in communities. Bond referendums aren't passed, and the real loser in it is the kids. They don't have the opportunity to have good facilities in some cases to go to school at. So we're encouraged by the discussion you're having here today because we've worked on this issue before. We've had a lot of support to help farmers' situation. But unless you put a package together that deals with the debt equalization aid issue, I don't think in the end we'll be successful. We've tried that before, and we've always come up to that block. Well, it's going to create a shift to other taxpayers in my legislative district, and I want to do the right thing for farmers, but I'm concerned about the impact it has on others in my district. And as was mentioned, you've gotten a lot of good figures on the debt service equalization aid, kind of a quick thumbnail that I've heard. When it started in the 1990s, about 80% of the school districts qualified for it. Now we're down to about 20%, and from the chart that was mentioned earlier, it looks like it will even be less. So I'm very encouraged that we're having this good discussion of the issue and looking at it as a total. I don't think we can fix one side of the equation without working on the other. So we'll continue to work with you and look for some solutions that's going to have long-term, meaningful reform so that we don't have to come back next year and try and address the same problem. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Name, give me, do you want to state your name? And
thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Tom Peterson. I serve as the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Farmers Union, and this, too, has been an issue that Farmers Union has supported, and more, it'd be interesting, too, to look at some of the levy referendums, where they are, and what's failed and what's passed, because this is an issue that I've heard, not just from our members, but also from, there's many other legislators besides just the ones you've mentioned today that have said, I want to do something about these school levy referendums. Appreciate the work Representative Demers worked on this for several years, as also Representative Broad, too. It's a growing issue, and I think it's also important to look at, you know, what pushes, and what I always don't like about this is that it sometimes makes it look like the farmer's the bad guy in this whole scenario, that and forces them to make a really tough decision and on their property taxes, and they also have, you know, to get the quality education and the schools that they deserve. But we're looking at property taxes and reading with Representative Brown's committee that our property tax issues are tough for farmers as land values go high. You know, many farmers in Todd County, I know we have farmers that have said their taxes have gone up almost 100% in the last 4 years. And we look at the outside pressures that Representative Heigerken was talking about coming into the area and when buying land if you're near a regional center and you can drive back and forth. The
the price of commodities, we think, too, is going to, you know, if corn stays high, that puts pressure on land. And then the 1031 land exchanges are a very important issue. And if you think you hear more and more about that, and I'm not a math major, but the calculations are literally 1,000% increase in the last 5 years on 1031 land exchanges in Minnesota, so that you have a lot more people going out there and utilizing this. And we even saw in the president's recommendations last week, not quite sure if it's the right thing, but some legislation or proposals to address these 1031 exchanges. So we hope that there's things that we can do to also, because that backs up the pressure on the levies. We have worked on the agricultural homestead credit too, which affects property taxes again for farmers. But the price of land, I was looking at this, the EOTA and the things that he passed out. If you look at a 350-acre farm, that's about the average in Minnesota, in looking at the state ag statistics. In a lot of your districts, and Representative Eakin's district, it's closer to 700, 800 acres. But then you multiply what farmers are getting for an acre, in especially in regional centers, but you're looking at 3,000 and 4,000 an acre. Representative Hamilton, we're just hearing down in your area, 4,500 an acre in some prime land. So a 300-acre farm is not a huge farm. It's easy to get to that $1.2 million. And our state ag land, the way the homestead credit works now, it was at $600,000, and it was indexed last year's to pass legislation, and it brings it up to about $690,000. We'd like to see that adjusted higher, and we'll be working with the tax committee to do that. Representative Marquardt's looking at that. We had bills to look at $1 million, $2 million. But again, when you look at the average farm and the land prices, those are what we think are putting pressure on these bills. I would mention, too, that in looking at this proposal, we do support this bill. The buildings, there could be some issues with that on, you know, what, who has dairy farms and buildings and who doesn't have buildings. We've also looked at ideas where you have an option, which I believe is Representative Broad's bill, where the school district would have an option if they tried and tried and tried to pass the levy referendum. They think it's the farmers, and in that situation that's putting on that, the school district would have the option to try to do it for house, garage, and 1 acre or buildings or whatever, and that would be something we would support also. Representative Demmer also looked at maybe a percentage of the land value being back. It's just a couple ideas also that have been tossed around there. So, again, I appreciate the time to just address some of these issues. Thank you.
Thank you. I almost called you representative. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Are there any questions from the committee? Can I ask you one question, Tom? I know we've talked about assessments in the past and assessing land for what it's being used for now when they have no intention of ever developing. And so many times the assessor assesses it as if there was going to be a development coming someday somewhere. How can we get to the point where this is going to be land, what it's doing now, and not projecting into the future?
Madam Chair, that's a tough question to answer, but I will say that we are working with Senator Skoy in the Senate, and I'm not sure who he's working with in the House, and he's the chair of the Property Tax Division, to look at agricultural land being classified and people getting the agricultural homestead credit when they're not actually farming it. So if you're buying deer hunting land and then you're getting the lower tax classification for buying that land, that maybe is not what it was intended for. You're not looking for that break, and that a lot of times gives that person an advantage when they're looking to buy that land. And so we're looking to make sure that those programs are working for farmers and not the investors or people that are looking for that land, if I would mention. And mention two other programs, since we're talking about property taxes a little bit here. We do have two other excellent programs in the state. We have Green Acres, and we have the Ag Land Preserve Law that I don't think any counties that anybody in here represents uses except for maybe Waseca County, but you know, that helps, also helps reduce property taxes for farmers. Green acres can be used in any county, but again, Senator Skoy is going to be looking at legislation to make sure that those are helping farmers and people that are farming and renting land that for their income, but not people who are moving out and buying it as an investment. So,
thank you, Mr. Peterson. Representative Heiderkin.
Thank you, and you brought up another issue here that hasn't been looked at very carefully. In regards to the Green Acres, now my understanding that the Green Acre program is available for farmers that are involved in production agriculture. Is that program available for folks that, say, if I live in Edina and I want to buy some good hunting land and I buy 200 acres of hunting land out there, can I get those properties, those acreages, involved in the Green Acres as well to keep my suppressed property value of it?
Madam Chair, Representative, and there are different classifications for what qualifies for Green Acres, and that's the problem. That technically it's not, but we think that there's a lot of places where the county assessors have been telling us that they think people are abusing the Green Acres. And Green Acres is a buy down on your taxes; it's a tax deferment. There are, and I can get that for you too. That you can see as a real easy fact sheet. So,
yeah, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Thank you. When we work with this debt equalization, and that's a factor that I have not looked at, we look at pupil count, we look at a lot of different things, and there's a lot of variables. How does the Green Acres play into that? Is that going to be an important piece for us to work with?
Madam Chair, Representative Heiderkin, I haven't considered that either. And I you'd have to look at how many people are in the Green Acres program. And I don't think it would be, the equalization is very important, and I don't know that Green Acres will be a huge factor in that. I would look in the counties, though, that are involved in this agricultural homestead or the Ag Land Preserve Law. It's the 7-county metro area and then 3 metro counties, right, Waseca and Wabasha, that might be more impacted by that. So,
any other questions from any of the other members? Any other questions for Representative Demmer? Any comments? Well, thank you very much for coming in front of us.
Thank you very much for the time. I think this is a great conversation, and that's what we're supposed to be here doing.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it, too. Is there any other business? I'm reminding you that the agenda shows that we are in the basement hearing room, but it is room 5, so make sure you, I think there will be an email going out reminding you, but it will be in room 5. And the agenda on Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. is discussion on ag education. So anybody has any other comments? Meetings adjourned.